Blog Talk Radio.
On this live show or on the archives. Tonight we have a little bit of a transition to announce. Lori Del Rio is now going to be hosting Psychic Perspective, and she is with me. Welcome, Lori.
Hello, Doug. How are you doing tonight?
I am very good, thanks, and looking forward to hearing what you've got to say on Psychic Perspective. Tonight, the topic is going to be using psychics on investigations. Of course, Gregory Kent, our own Paranexus board member, has been hosting the show, and he's got his hands full with some college stuff going on. So Lori is going to take over the show, and so I'm sure she'll have some good stuff to share with everybody. Lori, of course, known Lori for several years, and Lori, I'm going to let you tell everybody a little bit about you, and then I'll tell them the truth.
Don't be too mean, okay?
I won't.
I am from Tampa, Florida. I have three wonderful children. I am getting married in another 2 weeks. I have that to look forward to.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I have been communicating with spirits all of my life. I can see and speak to them. My daughter, who is getting ready to turn 17, she can also see and speak to them, but not at the same time. And I have a child, he's 10 years old, his name is David, and he is autistic, and he just thinks they're everyday people. So it runs in our family. My mom is a sensitive, and my great-grandmother was, of course, back in a time when it wasn't exactly the most popular thing in the world.
Right. Well, it certainly is getting more popular, and if some of our listeners may recall that a month ago you were on the show with Gregory talking about psychic abilities and autism. Interesting show. So tonight we are going to take your calls. John Rossi is screening our calls tonight, so you get to talk to John. And if you have questions, feel free to call in. The numbers are on your screen. If you have a question, you can also ask it in the chat room if you're in there with us tonight. The topic tonight, of course, is using psychics on investigations. And Lori, you chose this topic. So tell me, why do you feel this is an important issue to discuss?
Well, there are many groups that don't use psychics. They don't believe in following someone's feelings. And then there are groups that go to the opposite extreme. They'll use a psychic and they will follow everything a psychic says. There's pros and cons on sides. I think that using us in a investigation setting, it can be a plus, as in we could be used as another tool, just like all of your gadgets and the DVR systems and everything. It's just another way of finding where there may be a spirit. All of us work differently. There's no two psychics that are the same. But we have the group that I've worked with, which is Spirit Team Tampa. We've had some positive results. Not like I said, not everybody likes to work that way. If you've seen ghost hunters, they don't use psychics. But if you go to like paranormal cops or some of the others, they do. And I guess it depends on your beliefs are, as in how this is going to help or hurt. But I think that we could be used in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Of course, we've been on a number of investigations together where, you know, you were using your gifts and it's been rather fascinating on many occasions. You also do trance work of a kind. Tell everybody what trance mediumship is.
Well, it's kind of like letting someone in. What it actually is letting a spirit borrow you for a short period of time to be able to speak, work through you. Usually it's a point where I have other people around me that are able to control a situation. It's happened, I think, one time without my control, and that was once when I was very, very tired. But there again, I had people that I trusted around me.
Where was that?
We were in Casadega, Florida.
Mm. We were doing a table.
You were there with me.
Yeah, I know. That's when I was trying. I couldn't remember if it was there or another place. So I remember that time. But there's been a few times that I've been with you that, and you know, this was kind of an interesting thing because I can always tell when Lori's, as I call it, dialed in. And that one time in Casadega, she was dialed in to a deeper degree than I had seen her before. It was fascinating. Was that when I'm not going to mention any names here, but one of the participants did the automatic writing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and she didn't realize that she actually had that talent.
Yeah, it was a shocker.
It shocked us and it shocked her. She's still talking about it to this day.
Hmm.
But they seem to, when they want to talk, sometimes they can get a little pushy. And that night, I mean, if you remember, we had gone, you know, from very early in the morning, and it was already like 2 o'clock or two in the morning again, the next morning, and we hadn't slept, and I guess I had just lost a bit of control over myself, which is something that I don't like to let happen. But I'm glad that I had everybody around to be able to control the situation.
Yeah. And we'll talk about controls too. In fact, I guess now's as good a time as any to talk about controls. And there are various types of controls. And this is probably a good, good advice for anybody who's doing trance mediumship. Of course, it's probably advice they already know. But it's when you're involved in that kind of a thing, you know, you want to have not only people around you who know who can aid, you know, if you need to come out of it, they can assist you in coming out of it. But do you ever, let me ask you this, because I'm not sure I know the answer. Do you use any spirit guides as controls?
I do have a spirit guide. Usually I can, they're kind of a gatekeeper.
Right.
Where, yes, they can come and they can help me usher them out, or sometimes they'll let me know whether it's someone that I want to let talk or not. That night, I don't even, like I said, we were just so tired, everything went kind of to the wind. And when I'm not using a spirit guide, it's nice to have people that you trust to know, because they know who you are, and they know, like you said, you've witnessed, so you know me, and you know when it's not me, which is something when you're performing one of these, when you're doing one of these, you've got to have somebody there who knows you.
Mm-hmm. And that's important. But it's interesting to see this dialed in state, or this, you know, if it's not a full trance state, because there's various degrees of trance mediumship. I mean, there's some trance mediums who will go into it absolutely completely not remember a thing. How does that work for you? Do you remember much or not?
I do remember some. It's almost like stepping back away from myself for a few minutes, being in the same room but not being at the forefront. Where I can most of the time reach out and take my position back. I don't step out entirely. And I know a lot of mediums do that, but I don't want to do that. I don't feel that that's safe. But I do remember the conversation that I can hear. I can hear it as if two friends are talking in front of me. I'm just not part of the conversation.
And that's true. And some of the trance mediums I've read about, you know, they'll use their spirit guides as a control, as a gatekeeper to, you know, make sure that only benevolent and positive energies come through, or entities come through. So it's an interesting thing to see. So let's I had another question. I'm sure it'll come back. In fact, no, I guess there wasn't one. I was thinking there might have been one in the chair, but I answered that. Okay, so using psychics on investigations, do's and don'ts. What are some do's?
Well, do give a psychic a piece of paper and let them walk around and pick up their impressions.
Followed by all kinds of cameras and recorders and all that stuff?
No. I always like to have one person walk around with me. Somebody that can just, I don't believe in sending anybody into a place by themselves, whether it be a psychic or investigator or anybody. And they shouldn't be wandering around by themselves. So there always should be somebody with you. But what I think is that you shouldn't send somebody in and let them just speak and say what they're saying. You know, you need to have your psychic writing things down and not tell the rest of the investigators and not tell the clients.
Okay, so there's don'ts. Don't tell the investigators what you're saying. Don't tell the investigators what you're picking up, and don't tell the clients. Is that what you're saying?
Right yet. You want them to be able to get it first. You want clean readings. Everything to be clean. Let the psychic pick up what they're picking up. Let the investigators do their job with their tools and equipment, and then get together and say, well, this is what our psychic has found, and let them go from that point. Another thing is letting a psychic know the history of a house before they get there. Mm. I prefer not to know.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to go a step further and say that should never happen. A psychic should never be privy to historical research. Don't you agree?
I do agree, because I'm only human, and you know, you tell somebody, well, this is what supposedly happened. Well, that's what they're going to be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they don't know it, you know, if they tell themselves, I'm not going to look for this, I'm not going to look for this, somewhere in the back of your head, you are looking for it. So you want to go in there, again, to use that word clean. You want to go in with absolutely no preconceived ideas. So you can pick up what you are, whatever it is that you're picking up is from you and not from something that you've been told.
And I'm going to even just add a suggestion on top of that, those good suggestions. If you're a psychic and part of a team, or if you have a psychic on your team, I'm going to suggest that when the psychic goes to the house, that, you know, don't let them meet the client quite yet. Go in, let them go in without any kind of distractions or, you know, any chance of contaminating any impressions type of thing. And the reason I say it is, you know, that way we don't unconsciously or automatically read a person's body language or demographics or you know, different things that we can pick up off people.
Right.
That would even preserve the clean reading. And of course, so those are some good suggestions for using psychics, to some do's and don'ts. And then at some point in the evening, one of the things that we always do, especially if we have more than one sensitive on the investigation, we will interview a couple of us will interview the psychics independently and then compare notes. And we don't clue the team in on what the psychics are picking up unless there's a really good reason, and until much later, till after the bulk of the investigation has been done, you know, just to preserve everybody's, to keep preconceived notions from entering into it.
Right. Even with the investigators, you know, we've made it a point in Spirit Team to let the lead investigator go in and do the interview, and the rest of the investigators are not told of what the history is of the house or what it is that the client is seeing. That way they're not going in with it. We don't want them focusing on one area. We want a full investigation of the grounds of the house, you know, whatever it is that we're investigating. So it's not really just the person that's sensitive, but the entire group. And then later on, he will, you know, fill everybody in, but not until we get what we're looking for, or if it is anything. I mean, we've been places where there's been absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm. All right, there's a question from Kathy in the chat room. She has a question for you, Lori. Do you ever hear voices? If so, how can you determine the difference between voices in your head versus spirit voices?
Well, it's going to sound funny, but usually the voices in my head are usually my own. it sounds silly, but that's what it is. Usually the voices that die here in my head are usually what we call, you know, our own conscious, you know, subconscious, and it's my own voice. The way I hear spirits, to me, it comes in from just like speaking to my friend or my mother or anybody else. I can hear them just.
So you hear them audibly?
Yes, I hear them audibly, and so does my daughter. We both have the ability to hear with our ears.
Which is clairaudience.
Yeah. Right. It can be quite disturbing, especially at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're asleep, that's not a good thing.
Any time. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, you don't expect it. Especially if you're in your own home, you don't expect it. And to walk around a corner and see somebody or to hear something, it can be very disturbing, especially for, you know, my daughter. She's going through that adjustment right now with I don't want to help them. I just want them to leave me alone. And
well, why is it... So why is it that psychics seem? Why do these spirits seem to contact psychics? How do they even know?
Well, so, you know, it's a big joke going on that, you know, there's some kind of a, you know, how they have the psychic network down here. Well, I think that they have one there too. They all kind of pass the word around. But a lot of times, I think they know because all of a sudden I'll see them and they see that I saw them. They may be trying to contact everybody, because I've spoken with a spirit that says, I've been trying to talk to her, but she can't hear me. She doesn't see me. I don't know what else to do.
Huh.
So I have a theory that they may be trying to speak to people, and because you don't have the gift, or you're not on, I'm not going to say the gift, but you're not on that wavelength, you're not picking up the signal, but someone else who is sensitive does. So when they find this sensitive person, they're attracted to them.
Do you? And that's an interesting thing. I mean, it's entirely possible that spirits are trying to talk to everybody, and the only people that pick them up are those who are psychic inclined. You know, we always wondered about the concept of psychics being like a beacon of sorts, where there seems to be some I don't know, some anecdotal evidence to that, where spirits are drawn to psychics like a, you know, like almost like a light, like a, you know, a moth or something would be drawn to a light. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it, you know, I guess it could be either way. Either they have an ability to determine, or they're just trying everybody.
I think a little bit of both. I know that that my 10-year-old son, they are attracted to him somehow or another. I know he doesn't go looking for them, and somehow or another, they find him.
So Kathy says, to hear a man's voice, you can safely say it's not your own subconscious voice.
Pretty much, yes. Unless my fiance is somewhere in a room, yeah, it's pretty much safe to say that that's not me.
So here's another question. What if you hear the voices outside your head or feel like a tap on your shoulder or smell flowers or something? I'm not sure what the rest of the question is. If you want a profundity, what are you asking? I mean, is it the same thing? I'll let them come back, and we'll pick up that question in just a moment. Why could a psychic hear conversations with spirits, whereas EVP only seem to pick up broken words?
That is a mystery. I wish I knew the answer to that. The only thing I can think of is there again frequency. I may have been tuned into just the proper frequency to listen to the conversation, whereas, you know, our recording equipment hasn't yet found that frequency where it can pick it up entirely. Maybe it's like being on an off station on the radio where you can pick up part of the music, but it's kind of broken apart.
Well,
but there are times where I'm not picking up the entire thing either. Sometimes, you know, I pick up bits and pieces of stuff.
Well, I'm just going to speculate here for a moment on the answer to that question, which seems plausible to me, is that, you know, when we're dealing with psychic conversations versus EVPs on digital recorders, we're actually dealing with two different mediums. We're dealing with, one is consciousness, which is the psychic medium, and then we're dealing with a mechanical or electronic medium, and the digital recorder is, you know, I guess it's seems plausible that it would use a different type of a different mechanism of sorts to get that message on there on the coil of the microphone. Whereas with psychics, they're dialed into the, you know, the Akashic record or into the universal consciousness or whatever. And it almost seems like a different communication style. Here's the rest of the question. What if you hear voices in outside your head or feel a tap on your shoulder, smell flowers or something? Is it imagination, and do you need meds?
Well, first of all, only you know if you need that. I can't tell you that one. But if you feel like you're being spoken to, or you feel like you've been tapped on the shoulder, or you smell something that doesn't belong there, it's a possibility. It's a possibility that something or someone may be trying to make contact with you. If you can't hear them in the way that you want to, try an EVP session or try meditation. Everybody has the gift in a certain sense. You just need to try to connect with it.
Develop it,
Yep, and develop it. You just, you know, some of us are born with it more developed than others. But in my opinion, everybody has a certain level.
Well, the way to look at it is that, you know, anybody can learn how to play the piano, but not everybody can be a Liberace, or, you know, same with sports. Anybody can learn to play basketball, not everybody can be a Michael Jordan. Anybody can be a painter, but maybe not a Rembrandt. It's the same thing. We all have it to different levels. But yes, it's true, we do need to develop it and cultivate that. And some of these things that you're talking about, the profundity is asking in the question, tap on the shoulder, smell flowers, those are all variations of the clairs, you know, of ESP, of psychic ability. So, you know, part of it is to make sure in your own mind, part of it's to trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it's to, even if you get information that just makes no sense, you just hold on to it. And, you know, see what comes of it. right? I mean, I'm sure you get information you have no clue about.
Oh, yeah. And usually what I'll do is I have a little notebook and I'll jot it down. I'll take it, because it may not mean anything to me right now, but, you know, 2 weeks from now, I may go, aha, that's what I was, you know, what mm-hmm. they were trying to tell me. So you just take and write it down for your own. Nobody has to know about it, you know. Just write it down for you to go reflect on later.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, and meditation is one of the primary ways you use to develop your psychic abilities, along with a few other tips. Kathy's asked, maybe psychics pick up with ESP rather than EVP. Is that basically what you're saying, Doug? Yes, that's basically what I'm saying. We're using two different mediums. That's just conjecture on my part, but it makes sense. We're using two different methods of communication. One's mechanical. They have to somehow produce EMFs to interface with the microphone coil to produce an EVP. That perhaps takes more energy, whereas thought and consciousness, the psychic medium, may not take so much. It's, you know, psychic ability in consciousness, it's so effortless. It's like thinking. And in telepathy, for example, when you, if you have that gift, you know, you communicating with a mind, you know, reading people's minds or sending thoughts or picking up on cues or clues. So that's what I'm saying.
Well, that sounds like a very good theory. You know, I've never really thought about the difference between the ESP and EVP type thing, but I mean, they're two very different ways.
Mm-hmm. They are. So let's talk about, unless you know, anytime you have any points you want to bring up, just jump in. But it dawned on me that, you know, there's a lot of people who are in various stages of psychic development, whether natural or from their own efforts to develop. And let's focus on investigators who go on some of these investigations. You know, one of the things that I've been trying to do recently, and I guess I have for some time now, is to pay attention to the energy of the room. And, you know, I haven't always considered myself psychic. I have been working diligently for the last 6-8 months to develop it, and I'm making some headway, and I finally decided that my clairsentience or touch and claircognizance or knowing is probably the stronger of the two, or the rest of them. Clairvoyance, you know, I'm just not picking up much. Sometimes when I'm around Gregory, I'll get mental images, but, you know, and that's my theory, that when you're around the psychics, it seems to amp up the ability to pick up things for me. But now I've lost my train of thought where I was going with this. You know, it happens when you get in your 80s like me. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe that. That was a total lie. I'm only in my 78s. No, that was a lie too. So anyway, I know where I was going with this. So when you go on an investigation, paying attention to the energy of the room, the house, letting things settle, and trying to just get an impression of what could be going on. I mean, I'm sure you go into locations where you, when you've already said, you pick up nothing, and then
right.
There are other ones that you pick up stuff. Is that immediate, or does it take you a bit to tune in?
It depends. There's some places where I can go into, and immediately it's like walking into a brick wall or a cloud of smoke. And then there's other times where it may not be so overwhelming, and you kind of let things calm down, because, you know, there was something that came up on Paranexus about doing investigations in the dark, and what, mm-hmm. yeah, it was a poll that someone had started,
Brian,
about, do we need to do investigations in the dark? Does it have to be at night? And I have a theory on that, and it goes towards this a little bit. At night, it's easier to let things calm down around you. You don't have quite
as much. For a psychic.
Well, for anybody, really, because during the daytime, you're listening to the sirens, the car starts, all of the noises that are going on outside. Everybody's moving. The whole world is alive. But when it starts to get dark, the animals outside are starting to settle down. People are settling down. So it tends to make you going into a situation, it's easier to let everything in the room settle down. It's calmer.
Well, and that makes sense.
That's why I had put, yeah, I think that doing something, you know, doing the investigations at night is a better choice. Not because spirit activity is not there, but yes, when I have walked into places in the mid-daylight and felt like, you know, I was just going to pass out because of something that was there, someone, and they're so strong. And then again, I've gone into places where we've had to sit for an hour just to get the spirit to try, you know, to make contact, because they may not realize at this point in time that somebody is there that can talk to them, because they're just humans.
Do you use any aids at all, any types, any devices, any aids during your, you know, your psychic activities on an investigation? And I know you, I know you've used table tipping before, but anything else that you have used or others that you know others have used?
Well, the table tipping, and usually I'll have someone there that's, I usually channel more.
Right, you use facilitator.
Right. Gregory has come with us and done, and he's done the table tipping. I also have used Touchy, which is, there's other words for it, but I can pick up energy from an object.
Psychometry.
Yes.
You can tell things about it.
We used to call it touch-see, whereas you can, you know, hold on to something and see what's gone,
right,
what the pictures are that you get from it. And it doesn't need to be energy from, you know, from anything in particular, which is why, you know, it could be just generalized information, because you're not going to get, you know, too much, unless there's something that's tragic that has happened with that person. It's really hard to get anything more than general information. Basically, that's what I use. My biggest thing is a pencil, a piece of paper, and walk in the room and try to make contact. If the spirit wants to. I've seen some, they don't want to make contact. They don't want to talk to you, and they'll tell you, I don't want to talk to you.
Well, you don't have to be pissy about it.
Well, they do. So they're humans. That's what people forget, is we're dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
We're not dealing with, you know, beings from, you know, the third generation of, you know, Mars or something. These are people that we're dealing with. And we don't know, you know, what's bothering them unless they want to tell us. And if they don't want to tell us, then what can you do? I mean, it's just like Great Aunt Mary, you know, they don't want to tell you. You can't force them. They have free will.
Have you ever encountered what you might consider a non-human entity?
No, knock on wood, to this day, I have not. Thank goodness. I it's really not my cup of tea.
Well, that's probably why you haven't seen any.
I usually, if I get a call, I'll try to refer that type of case to someone who is more equipped to deal with that type of thing. You know, we have several people that we are keep in contact with who handle those type of cases.
Right, and I'm just going to throw in my two cents on those. You know, those types of cases are extremely rare. And, you know, again, there's nothing to really support, you know, being afraid of that type of a thing. A lot of people are. I think it's more the concept than it is anything. But, you know, we talk about non-human entities all the time in terms of angels, some guides perhaps. You know, those kinds of things, nobody's afraid of them. But then we get into some of these others and, you know, malevolent, inhuman entities or spirits, and people seem to be afraid of them. But, you know, there's just really not enough evidence to suggest that anybody needs to be afraid of anything. In fact, I was just watching a show on Animal Planet today where, and I don't usually watch these, and I may not watch anymore, but, you know, a group came in and encountered something in a basement that they thought was coming at them, and they had to get out of there. And I'm thinking, why are you leaving don't leave. You know, you got an opportunity here to see what's cooking. I mean, that's just something I will never be able to understand. But that's me. I'm probably different than a lot, and I hope that's in a positive way.
Well, running away from it isn't going to help. It's not going to help you, and it's not going to help the client. There again, I haven't run into anything that wasn't human, but I've run into some pretty nasty human spirits, and
yeah.
They don't change much from life to death. I mean, if they're a jerk in life, they're not going to suddenly have an epiphany at death and change. Most likely they're going to be worse, because now they're not only a jerk, but they're a dead jerk, and they really resent that part.
Yes, we begin to affectionately refer to them as ass souls.
Yes.
That was funny. So, but the thing that I was wanted to get to, too, is we don't want to ever promote fear in terms of investigations and with the clients. And that's another big one for psychics. Can you comment on that? For example, you go into a location, you're picking up some pretty, you know, weird stuff that could potentially create fear. What do you do with that information?
As opposed to giving it to a client or telling the
right.
investigators?
Mm-hmm.
Well, giving it to a client, you don't want to scare a client, because they're calling you, they're already afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a positive thing. They're not going to be able to deal with, you know, they're not going to be able to do what they have to do if they're being made to be afraid. You have to give them the positive ways of dealing with this. First of all, they need to take their home back. And 90% of the time, telling the spirit, you don't belong here anymore. This is my home. You have to leave. 90% of the time, that works.
Mm-hmm.
I would never, ever tell a client, you have a demon in your home, or you have
yeah.
a malevolent entity in your home. There has been more damage done.
Amen.
But to people by them telling, you know, it's just wrong. First of all, it's the wrong thing to do. You don't know for sure
right.
that that's what it is, okay? And second of all, you know, can you imagine the fear that goes through someone's head upon hearing it? They've, like I said, they've already called you because they're afraid. Well, now
mm-hmm.
you're telling them that they have this evil thing in their home, and goodbye, we're leaving you to it.
Yeah.
Tell them how to take their home back, and I have told them this is what you need to do. You need to take your home back. And just try and counsel them the best they can. And if we do need to get, you know, someone else involved, then we get someone else involved. But I have not had that problem to that extreme yet. I've had clients, I believe, that have been not seeing forest for the trees, if per se, they think that there's something that's evil that's there. I haven't found anything that's evil that's there. And just that is enough to drive somebody over the edge.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a lot of shows about belief systems and the psychology of investigations and all that. And belief is extremely powerful. In fact, belief is, it's all about belief. And when you help a client take their power back and their home back, all you're doing is managing belief systems. That's all it really amounts to. You're helping them to take their power back, which means changing their own belief system, which in turn changes their energy, their frequency, you know, their vibe, so to speak. And it establishes boundaries. It's essentially what's going on here. And you're absolutely correct. You don't want to promote fear if you're an investigative group or if you're a psychic. If you do pick up on something, if you're a psychic, and you're really concerned about it, share it with the team leader, the group leader, the founder, whoever's in lead, the lead investigator, and keep it to yourself because, as Lori said so accurately, you know, no psychic is 100%. And different psychics are tuned into different frequencies and pick up different things. So it's best to help the client take their power back. And frankly, calling in somebody else, that's all they're going to do anyway, is manage a belief system. Isn't that true?
Yes. And someone, you tell somebody that they have something that they're going to be afraid of, you're already putting them in harm's way. That, I mean, just the act of telling somebody that, that's like their first, the first thing that in a line of many things to come now that they're going to have to fear. And you started the ball rolling. So, you know, you need to it, and instead instill some belief in them that they can hand, that they can take their home back. You need to make them stronger, not weaker.
And that actually goes for psychics as well. You know, a lot of people are budding psychics, so to speak. They're developing their abilities, they're, whether through meditation or other means or both, you know, and they may be afraid at times, or they may not know how to look at it. I can't emphasize enough that taking your power back, which may not sound like much, that is perhaps one of the most powerful concepts that we have in life, let alone on investigations. When we take our power back, we are taking a huge step toward being healthy emotionally, mentally, and so forth. And we're establishing healthy boundaries. We're taking our power back. We are standing our ground, so to speak. And it works whether you're in a toxic relationship, and it works whether you got a haunting going on. It's like, and it works even with abduction scenarios. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. And I'll say it again, when we take our power back, our energy changes, our vibe changes. I mean, you can look at somebody who's dejected, depressed, sad, discouraged. They're hunched over. You know, their life changes. Now they're happy and jubilant and all that. And look at their body language. I mean, now they're standing tall, their head high. I mean, everything about us can change. So I just wanted to reemphasize that point. John does have a question. Lori, do you usually deal with earthbound spirits?
Most of the ones I deal with, yes, are earthbound spirits. Usually they're ones that have some kind of a fear of crossing over. And unfortunately, one of the greatest fears that keeps spirits on this side instead of crossing over is the fear of heaven and hell.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. They have been told sometime in their life that if they've done something wrong, they're going to go to hell. So now they've passed away and they're afraid to cross over because they think that there's hell waiting for them on the other side. So they stay here, and this is what they're doing. They're putting themselves through hell. This is hell.
Mm-hmm. And
they're watching their families grow up. They're watching TV. They're doing stuff, and they can't be part of anything.
And that only underscores what we were just talking about, belief systems. And, you know, belief, again, is most potent force in the universe. It started wars, stopped wars. It's responsible for our failures, our successes. It's responsible for everything. And if we take those unhealthy beliefs with us, you know, they obviously can cause problems, but they certainly cause problems for us in this life too. And that's why it's so important for investigators to be careful of those beliefs and not inadvertently pushing those beliefs, especially beliefs of fear that are fear-based, onto the clients, you know, even unwittingly. Here's another question from it's from Eric. Lori, do you have the ability to communicate with animals or animal spirits?
When they cross out, when an animal dies and it becomes a spirit, it doesn't change its way of communication. He still talks cat or he still talks dog.
Are those actual languages?
I think to them they are. I'm not too sure, but, you know, they die and they go into spirit form just like humans do. And I know that that's against a lot of people's religion, their belief line, but they do, and a lot of them wait for us, their human counterparts. And we have had a case here in Tampa where the entity that was haunting the house was a dog. Hmm. And the client didn't want the dog to be made to cross over, not that I could have made the dog cross over, because if he didn't want to go, he wouldn't have gone anyway. But that's all it was. And they weren't getting voices. They were just, you know, feeling what a dog, you know, would feel like in a house. And it happened to have been an animal that they had that passed away. But, yes, I do see the animal spirits just the same. And if they don't want to go, they don't go either.
Here's a question that you had answered in the chat room, but I think it's worthy of bringing up. Do you feel that these spirits, good or bad, feed off your emotions?
Well, just like living people, they can. And you can feed off of somebody's demeanor, their emotions. You know, it's not a matter of feeding off, but you pick up on somebody how their mood is that day, and before you know it, you're acting that way. And I think that spirits are the same way, and they can pick up on whatever emotional state that you're in, and they can, you know, either absorb it or they can use it against you, or, you know, just like any human being, just like any of us. Like I said, to me, they're just, the only difference is that I call them non-fleshies because they don't have a body. The fleshies and the non-fleshies, the only difference is a physical body. That's it.
And that's an excellent way to look
at it. And the fact that they can walk through walls and we really can't do that, but, you know.
Well, yeah, different energy, different body. But that, you know, that's
right.
Such a beautiful way to look at this whole thing of spirits, ghosts. They're no different. They're just people. And so many people are afraid of ghosts, afraid of spirits. And I'm, you know, they're nothing to be afraid of here. They're just like you and me. You know, it's just, you know, you go to a mall, you're walking through the mall, there's a ton of people there. You don't know them. You don't pay any much attention to them. Same with them. They don't pay much attention to you, but you're not really afraid. And yet when we talk about ghosts, not so much to investigators per se, but to the general public, they're afraid, but they don't need to be, because they're just people, and they're impotent. I mean, they can't do much.
Right. And you know where I blame that? A lot on Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Because they have to make you buy or go to a film or go to a movie. So they dramatize everything, and they bring it, you know, into these horrible, horrible pictures of people wandering in and, you know, and having these nasty entities that can reach out and pull you through a wall. This is not reality.
That's right.
This is Hollywood. These are people. You know, for me, it's like going through a grocery store. You know, they're there. I'm here. I don't always pay attention to them, and they don't always pay attention to me. They're just people. You know, they're, like I said, they just don't have a body. There's not this group of them that are, you know, hideously twisted, and they're looking to pull you into a different realm. That's all Hollywood. It's not real.
Well put, because there's just no evidence that these spirits can or have really harmed people. That's most Hollywood. I'm still looking for a credible example of a spirit harming a human being.
Usually it's the investigator trying to get away and tripping over something that gets them hurt.
Yeah, so nothing to be
that's usually
of.
How they get hurt.
So, you know, some good stuff. And I just wanted to add on, too, as far as feeding off emotions. I mean, you hit it. You nailed it. You know, we've got people in life who we sometimes refer to as emotional vampires or even psychic vampires. You know, they suck energy from you. I mean, we all know people like that that just seem to drain you when you're around them. And it's the same with the spirits. So viewing them as we do people is an excellent approach to that. Here's another question. Lori, do you feel that these spirits see us on this plane as spirits? Good question.
You know what? It's not something I ever thought of. I know that they can see us, but I've never thought of asking how they can see us. That's a stumper. I don't know. I'd love to know the answer to that question, how it is that they see us, whether they see us in whole or the way that I see them. I mean, I don't always see them full, you know, filled in. Sometimes it's like watching a TV and they phase in and out. It depends. But that's a good question. I'm sorry. I wish I had an answer for you.
Here's another question. And then just to follow up, I guess, before I ask this next question is, That's something that fascinates me too. I mean, if you've watched the movie The Others with Nicole Kidman, I mean, it was a fascinating concept.
It was.
Do they see us or consider us the ghosts? It's fascinating. Question from Kathy. When a psychic is a part of an investigating team, do they give the report of their findings to the investigators or directly to the clients or both?
Actually, I give my report to the lead investigator. Then at that point, he will choose whether he wants to let the other investigators in or talk to the clients. I mean, there's things that you're not going to tell a client, okay? There's always things that you watch what you say. You know, you don't want to make somebody afraid in their own home. So you really have to trust your lead investigator to make that decision. And unless he asks me to, I'm not going to go to the client and tell them anything. That's what his job is, and I'm leaving it to him. That's what we have him for.
Mm-hmm. It's doing otherwise can create problems. It has for me in the past when somebody on the team who frankly wasn't even a psychic thought they were, and the client thought they were, and the client's constantly looking to them for direction and completely ignoring the team leader, who happened to be me at the time, and I'm trying to resolve this, and there was really nothing there. There was really nothing there other than, and this is really true, the client's watching way, way too many of these reality ghost hunting shows, and
mm-hmm.
they really wanted there to be something there, but there really was nothing there that was in any way threatening or anything. It was just, in my opinion, more wishful thinking than anything. So that's a good advice. Go to the lead investigator to they'll debrief the psychic. Now, if you're a psychic and are the lead investigator, you know, I mean, this is pretty much 101 stuff. You know, I mean, choose your words carefully. Don't do no harm. Don't promote fear. Those are all good guidelines to follow.
And trust your lead investigator. That's one of the things that that I believe in, is you need to trust that person to fill the client in properly. They also, when you go into an investigation, one of the things that they do is feel out the client to see if there's any mental issues there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you don't know what damage you're doing telling a client something. That's what I said. You have to trust that lead investigator. That's what they're there for. I was a lead investigator, and I stepped down because I didn't think that doing what I do, it was a good idea for me to keep that position. I needed to separate myself and let someone else take the reins so I could focus on what I could do for the group. Yeah. In this sense, I felt I was a bigger help this way
mm-hmm.
than I was, because I wasn't able to separate the two things. And it's very hard to do that.
Well, that's because you're using both sides of your brain. On the one hand, you're using logic and analytical stuff, scientific. On the other hand, you're using your right brain, spiritual. You know, get into one, you know, you're going to stay on one side, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Make it more effective, you know.
Well, you don't want to. Just human beings are going to confuse things. Just being human, you know, you're taking your client interview, and they're giving you information you need not to know right now. You need someone else to be able to get that information while you're picking up on what you need to pick up. So, being a psychic and a lead investigator, to me, it wasn't the best choice.
Yeah, and that makes sense. So, you know, some good points here. I'm just trying to think of some other good points for those that we've picked up over the years in using psychics. And I guess I'll go back to one point that you had mentioned earlier on, that some groups just don't use psychics. And, you know, they claim this complete scientific method, you know, which would obviously exclude psychics. if you went strictly scientific. And one of the things we've always done is try to use more of the true scientific method, meaning being open-minded and open to these different things, see what you got. The interesting thing about the entire paranormal field is that neither side can prove one way or the other. So we're looking for information. We're looking for something that could potentially help the client resolve the situation and let everybody move on happier. So my advice is to, yes, use psychics, but when you're considering having a psychic join the team, what are some things to look for, Lori, to make sure that they're, you know, genuine or stable or all of that good stuff?
Well, first of all, you want somebody that's grounded. You don't want somebody who has runs off in flights of fantasy. I would definitely interview the person at length to see where they stand on certain things. And these malevolent inhuman entities and these things I would question about, okay? Because you don't want somebody that's seeing demons at every corner. You don't want somebody that's seeing Indians, because I've had, you know, work with people who see Indians everywhere they go. You know, I know America was founded by the Indians. You know, they were here first, but that's not the problem everywhere we go, and we've had those type of people too. You want to make sure that they are open-minded to the scientific side of it also. They're not going to claim that they are the be-all and end-all. We are not perfect. We're not right all the time.
Oh, say it ain't so.
Ah, sometimes we get stuff we don't know what to do with, and it could mean this, and we're thinking it means that. That's what I said, that you have to write things down because, you know, it doesn't always mean what you think it does.
Mm-hmm.
Look for their history. Where have they worked before, you know? Talk to some people.
Yeah, interview them, and, you know, if they look pretty good, then test them out, you know, take them on an investigation, and if they're really a good fit for your team, they will prove themselves. And,
right.
And, I mean, any decent psychic is going to say, no, I'm not always right. No, I don't always have the correct impressions, or I may misinterpret them. That's just honest. Let's take last question real quick. Have you ever, or can you discern the difference between the spirit of a person who has passed or someone who is out of body experiencing or astral projecting?
I've run into that one time, and there is definitely a difference. Someone who's still got a life force has a different glow, and it wasn't astral projecting. What it was they were actually someone who was at the hospital. I was actually in the hospital at the time, and I heard ma'am, and when I looked up, there was a young man there, and he had a glow about him. It was different. It was a life force. He wasn't passed. He was actually in a coma.
Well, interesting. Well, some good discussion tonight. We're, of course, getting run out of time here, and this has been Psychic Perspective, and, of course, Lori Del Rio is now, from this point on, going to be taking over as host for this segment once a month. So in about a month, we'll be back on. And next week is Thanksgiving, so we have no show scheduled for next week. The following week, Mark Anthony, psychic lawyer Mark Anthony, comes back, and we're going to be talking about psychic readings. He's going to do some psychic readings on the air. But we're going to be talking about how to view and benefit from psychic readings, looking at them in the proper way. We've had people who have almost like groupies, you know, following around getting psychic readings and basing their entire lives on everything. So we want to talk about that. If you are not a member of Paranexus, we'd love to have you come and join us at paranexus.org. If you're looking for some training in investigation techniques, paranexusacademy.org. We'd love to have you as part of that. Lori, thanks for being here tonight.
It's been fun, and I'm looking forward to next month's show.
And I'm sure Lori's going to have some outstanding topics all scheduled, and we'll get those up on the site as they come. We appreciate everybody's support and attention and participation in the chat room tonight, or if you're listening to the archive of this, thanks for joining us. We hope you'll join us next week. Also, be here this coming Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern for Formal Paranormal with John Rossi and Mike Jones. Thanks, John, for screening our calls. Good night, everybody.
Good night.